have with vendors is inquiring about new business. We didn't want to automatically have to push that requirement out. So we've had some relief, and we will be able to maintain those kind of communications now without having to report. And then by January 1st, 2011, we should have more information through the JCAR process about what you must and don't have to report. I've reproduced something that hasn't changed, which is the definition of what has to be reported. I won't repeat it now because it would be out of context. We're hoping to have more information, but that's currently the fullest extent of guidance. Senate Bill 3576, the trailer bill, did provide us some exceptions to reporting. So as of January 1st, 2011, if nothing changes, in addition to the statement about what has to be reported, there are four exceptions. I'll list the fourth one in a second. Statements made by a person in public, in a public forum, do not have to be reported. So if you're at a conference and you're talking to someone, you don't have to record every single conversation that you're having with vendors. Routine statements about procedure and form. If someone comes to you and says, look, I don't know when I have to submit my bid or where I have to submit it, and you tell them, you just look at the solicitation that says that you send it to central administration and it'll give you the date and time, that would be okay. That's not something that has to be reported now. Statements made by state employees to the agency head or other agency employees or employees of the State Ethics Commission. So internal discussions about upcoming procurements don't have to be reported. Arguably, under the existing definition, they would have had to have been. And the fourth one that I don't have here, but is primarily for internal staff, is statements regarding the administration or implementation of an existing contract. Those likewise don't have to be reported now. So the legislators have listened. These are exceptions that were brought up by multiple agencies, so they have been incorporated.
Albert, isn't the best example for number one not a private conversation that may happen at a conference, but rather if you're sitting, you know, on and listening to a workshop or what have you, and in these statements made publicly to the entire group, or, you know, questions or issues posed again in the larger group. I don't think it's quite been clarified to extend to, you know, one-on-one conversations or smaller conversations that might happen at those events that aren't necessarily public conversations.
Yeah. No, I think you
just wanted to clarify.
Yes, you are correct. It has both the elements of being a discussion in public, in a public forum. So you're correct about that. We are hoping to have some additional guidance very soon. And as there are developments prior to January 1st, 2011, I will find a way to make sure that the board remains informed, either through the executive director giving you updates or me giving you updates.
We'll continue to make presentations, too, as the JCAR process proceeds and its rules are clarified so that you know, we can pass that information along.
One of the other things that that has been changing is sole sources. I think there is a universal concern about sole source procurements and making there's a universal acknowledgement that they are necessary from time to time, but the procurement reform legislation requires that there be more transparency. To that end, we have to participate in sole source hearings. The process for the sole source hearing is listed there under the new hearing requirement. It doesn't take into effect until July 1st, but we've already gone through a couple of sole source hearings. I was at one yesterday. We have to provide notice. We have to provide information about the justification for the sole source, and then we have to be available to provide any sort of public comment. That has been ongoing, and the reason I put this up now is because I want everyone to understand that this is an additional process for transparency, but it has resulted in some additional lead time having to be incorporated into procurements. I put some examples of some of the sole sources that we've recently done, such as the coin counting machine parts, the CA roof, and the credit agency services. Those were all matters that came before the board for review as well.
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
On your last bullet point that approval or denial is received, so you have a public hearing, and then who approves or denies?
the chief procurement officer.
Oh, so the chief is the chief procurement officer is present at the public hearing?
No, a representative from the chief procurement officer is there.
Uh-huh.
CMS Legal conducts the hearings.
Uh-huh.
They take all of the information, including any public comment, and they forward it to the chief procurement officer.
And then the chief procurement officer either approves or denies.
Correct. We get notice of that approval or denial, and then we can move forward.
Okay, and currently on a sole source, even before these requirements, did you have to get any kind of approval or denial from a procurement person at CMS or something, or no?
We did, but it was mostly from administrative staff.
Uh-huh.
This has elevated the requirement so that it is available and transparent to the public.
Oh, yeah, now there's a public hearing.
Yes.
So that goes before the actual approval.
Correct. Okay, one other item that has been a concern are unsolicited proposals received from people interested in doing business with the state. And they're concerned that they would become prohibited bidders. I reproduced the section that I informed you before about Senate Bill 51 and that provision, and then I've added the new exceptions. Expressly allowed contact now includes when a business, a person or a business initiates communication to provide general information about products, services, and industry best practices. And the other exception is when person or business responds to a communication initiated by a state employee to evaluate new products, trends, services, or technologies. So there was an acknowledgement that perhaps the section before would stifle communication between the agency and industry. The legislation now takes that into account. From the trailer bill, it now expressly allows that contact. Are there any questions?
I have one. In my job, oftentimes there are companies that come into the building where I'm officed and will ask if they're an MBE or DBE or just a general contractor for an introduction to the TOLA. If I'm simply providing the general information and say, call Paul, I'm fine. Or do I have to report that?
First, the bright line. Prior to January 1st, 2011, you do not have to report that communication.
I understand that.
After July, or
so
after January,
the rules,
the rules should clarify.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. I know that sometimes these presentations ultimately lead to more questions that we don't have answers to yet, but we will try to do our best as those answers become available to keep you informed. We wanted to give Captain Jeschenek an opportunity to provide a, not demonstration, then a short presentation of the iWin computers that we're going to be hoping to procure for the only state police department.
Good morning again. Thank you for the opportunity to talk to you about this mission-critical law enforcement tool. This is a mobile data computer, also known as an MDC. You'll see our officers carrying these things into or out of their squad cars when they go to court, when they need to catch up on reports at the subpost. If you would talk to any of our officers or poll them, my guess is they would say that this is probably their best law enforcement tool because it allows them to accomplish our mission as efficiently and as effectively as possible. Officer safety. The first thing this tool gives us is when we use this tool, we can do our job quicker. So we're on the shoulder of the roadway quicker. So that gives us officer safety improvements. The other thing that a mobile data computer does is it lets us know who we're talking to. We can punch in the information and we know whether we're changing someone's tire or doing an enforcement stop, we'll know who the person is that we're talking to. Also, efficiency. Because we can get our job done quicker, that means we're getting it done more efficiently. Not only does that affect the officer out in the field, it also affects the clerical staff and the telecommunicators. For example, if we didn't have one of these in the car, we would be calling out more information on the radio, meaning that the telecommunicator would have to be responding to us more. Customer service. An officer can use a mobile data terminal to, let's say, complete a crash report. It gets electronically sent to the supervisor. Once their supervisor approves that, it is available for citizens, insurance companies, or others who would want to have information on that crash. It's also a green operation. We're not paperless, probably never will be, but using this tool, we use a lot less paper. The other thing is not just the green for the paper itself, but the relaying of the paper. Years ago, if I wanted to get information out or someone in my position wanted to get information out to the district, we would either put it on the radio or we put it in a memorandum form. And that memorandum form, copies would be printed, they would either be posted or if it's important enough, everyone would get that piece of paper. So the gas and the time it takes to do that is minimized using this tool. Mission critical uses. At the top, state police inquiry or Secretary of State inquiries, whether it's our DMV or other states, we check driver's licenses, we check ID cards, we check titles, registrations, and many other things using the mobile data terminal. The other thing that we do is criminal history checks. Get a background on the person that you're talking to. Traffic crash report completion can be done online, I discussed that. Also, commercial vehicle inspections can be done online in more of a paperless fashion. Officer communications. We have a messaging capability on these, similar to email, where if I need to get in touch or the shift commander needs to get in touch with an officer, or an officer wants to talk to another officer in our district or another district, they can use this as a means of communication. In District 15, we have a computer-aided dispatch interface, which is very helpful as well. Supervisors can look, they can see what their officers are doing. Also an emergency body. You know, the officer's out there by themselves, their lifeline is the telecommunicator, but if they can't get on that radio to talk to that telecommunicator, they have buttons on their radios. They also have a button on this mobile data terminal that can let people know that there's an emergency. We can get other people over there to assist. Future uses. We say that it's future, but really the future is here now. We talked earlier about integrating it with the in-car camera system, and as you can see, it is part of the in-car camera system. Also, we want to move towards electronic citations so that the citation can be issued, the violator would get a copy, but everything else would come in here to the courts so that it would be a more streamlined process. Also, they're looking at a new electronic crash traffic crash program. Also, ICASE is an electronic reporting of police reports that the state police is working in, but we're offering it to other agencies. It is a more efficient way of recording information. Hopefully, it will lead to more arrests. Also, as Mike King mentioned earlier, or asked the question earlier, it is compatible, both the cameras and the talkbook is compatible with the automatic license plate reading technology that we hope to get in our squad cars to be able to get Amber Alerts, toll stop laws, and other violators. Also, while you can go to McDonald's and get a cheeseburger with a credit card, why not be able to post your bond with a credit card? That is something that people are talking about and could be a future use.
Cheeseburger is more fun.
Yeah. Some things about this particular unit. The CF-31 is a very ruggedized, you can tell by looking at it, it's a very ruggedized unit. If I could drop this thing on the ground and it would withstand that drop, I would challenge any of you to try that with your regular laptops. It's also watertight. A lot of times our officers may need to be out in the field, out in some inclement weather, and to know that it's watertight is very good. I mean, there's coffee and water all around here. Even in this environment, it's good to have a watertight feature. Better processor in this version, and also more storage space in this version. Also a brighter screen for the folks on this side of the room. When we first come in here, it's a little harder to read the screens on that side of the room. Same thing occurs with the officers out in the field. So they have a brighter screen that's part of this. Also data security, which I'll go into more detail. Security policies increase and improve all the time. We want to keep up with that. This particular model will allow us to do that. also allow us to safeguard personal information along with staying PCI compliant. Some features in this model that was not in its predecessors is the biometric reader and also the encrypted hard drive. I don't know if you guys noticed the typo. I just noticed it now. Any questions? And by the way, I misstated. Jim is actually from Panasonic Corporation, not from the vendor. So we appreciate Jim being here and Cindy being here. If you have any questions that are beyond my expertise.
Are these the ones we approved at last meeting? Or?
This is an upgraded version. Several months ago, you're right, Director, we did approve more of a previous version. These just came out in May. So this is the latest
we're moving
greatest.
To this one now.
Yes.
We'll move to this one.
Next month, we're going to make the upcoming request.
Right.
Questions?
Captain did offer to drop it if anybody wants to actually see it dropped. But I didn't tell him I didn't think it would be necessary, but.
I believe it.
Okay.
Off the railing, no.
So
just so I understand, we'll be replacing the old ones that are wearing out. We're not going to throw out all those ones we approved 2 months ago.
No.
So you know, we were approved 410. CF-30s were stuff not in this one last time. The CF-30s will not be replaced. The old CF-49 version that were purchased probably more than 5.
Great, thank you. Just wanted that on the record so nobody misunderstands.
Very good. Okay, this month, and I thank all of you for your patience in putting off the future project briefings and presentations. This month, we are starting those up again. I've asked Rocco to present an overview on the tollway system needs generally that will remain after the congestion relief program. This is not going to include the Jane Addams or I-90 corridor because, of course, there's been an extensive presentation specifically on that project. But it does take a look at the Tri-State Tollway and our facilities as well as some other infrastructure. So, Rocco.
All right, good morning. And pardon me if I ramble more than usual today. It was a rough night last night. 4 kids, wife, and 130-pound dog, all convinced there was invaders, ghosts, or house falling apart. So,
you got a plane
for your lunch. Yeah, no, I'm in Glen Allen. Tree City. So, again, this is a continuation of the future projects planning effort, and I may need some assistance from some of the other staff as we go along through here. So, some of the stuff. So, this is kind of a map of what we've already done to date with the congestion relief program. Kind of built different work of what's going on. A lot of the yellow is what we've done as far as widening and reconstructing the more permanent improvements. Some of the purple down the south extension, and the reds are pretty much the resurfacings and some of the design work that's ongoing. We've done a lot, by adding over 100 miles of new capacity in our system, and it's allowed us to address some of the most congested sections of our entire system. Our traffic analyst, Henry Guerrero, he's been monitoring the work to date, and we've actually seen some very positive results as far as, simply put, traffic is up and congestion is down. So that's the perfect mix of things that are going on right now. So while the congestion relief program did a lot to address many of our major needs, there were some areas that just didn't need to be addressed over this particular 10 or 12 year period. Our general engineering consultant, AECOM, has been working with the tollway staff and our pavement expert to really develop reasonable expectations of what some of our long-term needs are and what facilities and pavements are going to need to take some attention. Attention would be either rehabilitation or a major reconstruction. Our goal on all projects is to get 60 years out of our capital improvements through regular cycles of rehabilitation and resurfacing and whatnot. So this asset management planning effort is a long-term look ahead to develop that cycle and the maintenance needs to achieve that 60-year goal. So we're really looking out from 2017, end of the current CRP, all the way through 2067. Some of us won't be here in 2067. But we still have to look out at what we do in planning.
Anyone in particular that you...
I'm putting bets on myself. I don't know. We'll see. That's a long time, isn't it? But that's what planning is. It's not about looking at today. We need to look out at that future vision. This effort is really evaluating a wide range of infrastructure needs and assets, including roadway needs, ramps, bridges and culverts, maintenance facilities, toll plazas, both ramp and the main line, ITS or intelligent transportation system improvements, Illinois State Police needs, and other agency-wide initiatives, the green and sustainable projects, truck parking expansion, roadway technologies, and over-the-road communication. So it's an ongoing effort, and the following slides are going to provide an outline of what we're doing and where we're going with some of this. And all of this work is being factored into our overall future project planning to make sure that we address our needs in an environmentally and financially sustainable manner. So all the segments noted here are in satisfactory condition, but will need some attention in the coming years. And this work is not, the major work is not included in the current CRP. We're going to continue with these regular pavement rehabilitation cycles to ensure that we maintain a good condition of our roadway. And again, none of the work is required immediately. We're looking at the next decade plus or minus. So the sky is not falling, but we're going to keep an eye on it to make sure it doesn't move. Some of the notable projects that that will need some attention. Interstate 88, Deer Path Road to Illinois 251. This was this basically Sugar Grove to Rochelle, so some of the western suburbs out to the more rural areas of our system. Rochelle is just a little west of DeKalb. This was resurfaced in 2001. It's going to be resurfaced again in the coming years as part of our CRP. The resurfacings do a lot to maintain a good driving condition and to provide longevity in the pavement, but at some point in time we will need to do a more permanent improvement on that roadway. Illinois 251 to US 30, this is basically Rochelle to Rock Falls. If you don't know where Rock Falls is, it's a little west of Dixon, the boyhood home of Ronald Reagan. This area was rubblized in 2005 and a final overlay is planned in 2015. But again, we will need to address a more permanent fix out in that in these particular areas.
What's that?
What does
rubblized mean?
This is something that we did early on in our program. For those who weren't around for that, basically we take the existing pavement, and as our old director Jack Harbin used to say, it was like an 8-off meat grinder would come out and beat the pavement to pieces, and that would provide a new base. And then we come up with a new surface on top of that. So it was kind of like a recycling of our pavement, but we never took it out. We just left it in place and just beat it up. It was a very slow, long-moving process, but it was, at the time, it was, I think, one of the largest ones in the world. From a rubblization, it was an extensive stretch that we did out that way. And then the third section on Interstate 88 is from I-290 to York Road. So that's the far eastern section of Interstate 88. We just resurfaced that as part of this ongoing work. And that's something we're going to have to look at, is how do we coordinate some of that work in tandem with the IDOT's proposed Interstate 290 reconstruction and widening projects. Interstate 90, like I said, we've already covered that. We're not going to talk more about that. But just so you know, we do continue to work with our partners, with the Regional Transportation Agency, RTA, Metra, CMAP, and PACE, to define the needs of this corridor and to figure out how we can proceed and move forward and get some level of consensus and buy-in on what that vision is, the ultimate vision is for the I-90 corridor. Interstate 294, a new lane was added on Interstate 294, the central tri-state from Balmoral, or 95th Street to Balmoral. That's basically Oak Lawn to O'Hare Airport back in the early to mid-1990s. But there are still some original portions of pavement that are still out there. This is the most heavily traveled section of our entire system. This is really kind of the bread and butter of everything that we do and carries a significant amount of truck traffic and commercial vehicle traffic through that entire corridor. We're going to be resurfacing this corridor in the coming years, but again, it's something that we're going to have to keep an eye on over the next 10 years plus or minus to see, okay, what do we do for a long-term permanent fix out that way. There are many other regional projects that are also interact with this Interstate 294 corridor from 95th to Balmoral, and they will also be considered as part of this process. We've got the Elgin O'Hare and Western Bypass project, which kind of ties into this at the south end of, or the north end of our project, the south end of the Western Bypass. There's also the IDOT's Interstate 290 project that feeds into this. The old Hillside Bottleneck, or what people used to call the Hillside Strangler, ties into this corridor. We've got some major system interchanges Those are the interstate-to-interstate connections, Interstate 290 and 294 interchange. That's where you always see people waiting, going north on 294, waiting to turn in that loop. So there's other some opportunities through that that we're going to continue to monitor how we tie those projects in, and some other regional projects at Interstate 294 North Avenue. So this is going to be a quarter of interest as we go along. We'll factor a lot of the stuff into our master planning process as we proceed into the future. The Eden Spur, as you know, the resurfacing is going to start on the Eden Spur very soon. But that, again, is just the resurfacing. At some point in time, it's going to need some additional attention in the coming decade plus. Again, to reiterate it, our current CRP is sufficient to cover the needs of our existing system. This asset management planning effort, the 50-year look ahead, is really intended to identify what those long-term needs are and to work it in with our reconstruction and rehabilitation cycles. Ramps and bridges. We have annual maintenance programs that are allocated, funding that is allocated to ensure that all of our bridges, culverts, walls, et cetera, all of our structures are in good condition. The CRP, Roadway Reconstruction Widening Program, primarily focused on the mainline pavement and those bridges that need the most attention. We will be continuing to monitor and look at our ramps and some of the other bridges. To identify other opportunities. I think we talked about this and we had some agreements. Are there other opportunities for us to partner with other agencies, Illinois Department of Transportation, the county DOTs or municipalities, to do some of our ramp or bridge improvements as part of other projects? Or are these projects that we are going to take on our own? But there are some needs that are out there as far as the ramps and bridges and culverts and walls go. At some point in time, everything is going to be addressed. So much like we acted as a lead on a lot of these projects, we would look to for those opportunities where somebody else may act as a lead for these ramp or bridge type projects. It's an ongoing and continual effort to monitor all of these ramps and bridges. Our maintenance facilities. Also important to note is that many of the maintenance buildings were built back in concert with the original roadway system back in the 1950s. These facilities are aging and are in need of some attention, upgrades, repairs, or an entire replacement. We've added additional lanes as part of the congestion relief program. We've got new interchanges. We've got new roadways. And these additions to our system have added additional demands. What you really see on the map, I'll help you out, Doug, because I think you're trying to struggle to figure out what this says. It's an overall, we're putting together a plan for our overall maintenance facilities. But what we show here is, and John Benham might be able to speak to some of this, is what each, as you can see, these are the different maintenance facilities. And what we have in blue are those that will need some attention. And what we have in green are the ones that are in decent shape right now. We don't really have to worry about those. But each one of these colors corresponds to a particular maintenance area section and how much area they cover. So what we're looking for is to see if there's things that we can do to maximize some efficiencies with an expanded roadway system. Again, we're working on facilities that were built in the 50s, for the most part, that address the needs that we had back in the 50s. You can see some of the maintenance facilities we need. This is one down in Alta. We've got a maintenance facility up in Gurnee, and basically it's right in the middle of the Illinois 132 interchange ramp. That's a ramp that we're going to continue to monitor. That does it's one of the heaviestly traveled local interchange ramps that we have on our entire system. There's about 80,000 vehicles that run on 132 a day, and our maintenance facility is located smack dab in the middle of that. So that provides some operational challenges. We also have some opportunities to incorporate a lot of green initiatives and maybe some lead initiatives into our maintenance facility rehab program or replacement program. We've been out on site recently at both Naperville and Aurora. They've got some tremendous lead certified facilities out there from both a maintenance facility standpoint and also other public facility standpoint as far as the police department and Aurora. It was very nice. Again, thank you very much for allowing us to tour the facilities. That was great to see it, to understand how simple it can be to really create some of these LEED certified facilities. So what we do have some opportunities also, not just to create some green facilities, but to also partner with some local communities. There are some maintenance facilities that are located in maybe some prime locations for redevelopment. We've got one in Schaumburg right off of Illinois 53. We also have another facility, as Mayor Prado is very well aware, the interstate, and it's not just our maintenance facility, it's our warehouse and sign shop, all located within the infield area of Naperville Road, which has been completely reconfigured right now. So there are some other opportunities for us to partner with these